Tony Leon, great to have you in my sights. And I read your recent article in terms of South Africa potentially in a world of pain, given the disorder that prevails globally. And I paraphrase the headline of your article. But let's start with, a lot has happened since you penned that article. And if we read the temperature correctly, it is only just heating up. Give me your view of how we are playing this scenario and how we are perhaps harming the national interest.
Well, I think the sad and depressing answer is we're playing it very badly in most part. You could argue in terms of the expulsion of Rasool, which obviously is the new big thing to have hit the bilateral relationship smack in the face, that the one intimation of normalcy was the somewhat muted and non-belligerent response of the president or the presidency of South Africa to say it was regrettable and had been noted. Well, I thought that was, as I say, muted. It could have been worse. It certainly could have been better. And we can go into what I think a more appropriate reaction might have been or should be.
But well, of course, that is that. Before we go further, what would have an appropriate reaction from your perspective have been?
Well, you know, I bore witness to such a situation when I was South African ambassador in Argentina, and the American ambassador, my near neighbor and friend, Vilma Martinez, had the misfortune of having all her diplomatic cables hacked by Julian Assange of WikiLeaks. And suddenly, across every newspaper in Argentina, were reams of confidential messages the United States Embassy had sent back to the State Department on the eccentric and worse governance of Cristina Fernandez de Kirchner, who was the hard-charging populist Peronist president of the day. And they were very embarrassing. They were very accurate as well. They dealt with the mental instability of the president, the apparently ill-gotten riches of her family, which is exactly what an embassy should do. You've got to report back with candor in private, I have to say. We can get on to the public part in a minute. But this now was in the public domain. And almost as soon as that became public, America did two things. And obviously, America and Argentina have very important bilateral relations, arguably even more important than South Africa and America, given they're in the same hemisphere. Hillary Clinton, the Secretary of State, phoned Kirchner personally to apologize, and it was followed up by an in-person visit by Hillary Clinton to Cristina Fernandez de Kirchner. So, in other words, if I'd been sitting where Ramaphosa sits, I would have, well, tried to pick up the phone to Trump and apologize. And even if I didn't manage that, and apparently we have some difficulty connecting with the White House, I would have put out a public apology, which went beyond just regrettable. Because what Rasool did is unacceptable. There's no playbook that I've ever seen, unless you're actually intending to confront another country, for an ambassador to provocatively call out the head of state and the country administration in which he is a guest. That is, as I say, not without precedent, but usually it's done by an ambassador acting on instructions of his home country that we now want to provoke a fight with the host country. Now, the last thing I think South Africa needs, wants, or wishes to do is to provoke a further confrontation with the Trump White House. Rasool has, of course, given us that fight, or the next round in the fight. But even to go circle back to Ramaphosa, or his spokesman's response, or being regrettable, this is immediately undercut by the fact that this Sunday, the ANC is rolling out a hero's welcome, I read, at Cape Town Airport for the returning expelled Mr. Rasool. Now, they will say, oh, well, that's the party, not the state. But as we know, there is no such thing as a government policy, because in respect of international relations, it is absolutely, in fact, and in all respects, a sealed mandate of the ANC. Only an ANC minister, only two ANC deputy ministers, and there is a distinction without a difference when it comes to government policy and ANC policy. They are, as we say here, Corp and Ian Miss. So, you know, this is typical, though, of the doublethink, which bedevils most of our politics and particularly our foreign policy. Oh, we'll do two contradictory things at the same time, but hopefully you'll only look at the one, not at the other. And I think those days are long past.
Isn't it clear that the ANC does, in fact, want to ratchet up the aggression against the US? I mean, there is no holding back. Every single step that we've seen has been to further exacerbate the already tense situation between the US and South Africa. I mean, look at Cyril Ramaphosa's article alongside Colombia and Malaysia in Foreign Policy that you reference in your article. I mean, could you be more blatant in terms of your stance against a country than Cyril was in his article?
The answer is no, but the explanation is probably not a conspiracy to offend, but probably a cock-up of, you know, some bloke probably in the office somewhere thought this was a good idea. They probably, you know, ghost wrote the article or put their signature to it. I don't think it was as conscious, but yeah, maybe I'm giving the benefit of too many doubts, that they wanted to go out of their way to offend. But the net result, whatever your motive, lands up being offensive, you know, putting America alongside Israel in the dock for war crimes, I think was the purport of that article, if not genocide. So if South Africa wants a confrontation with the United States, it's kind of got one already, you have to say, and a lot of politicians here in most parties now describe the United States as a bully. Well, maybe the United States is a bully. Maybe Trump is not a nice man and he's bullying South Africa and many other countries in the world. If you want to stand up to a bully who weighs 900 pounds, and is armed with a bazooka, and you're a little chap with a pea shooter, I can tell you the outcome of the confrontation. It might not be nice, but I can say what it is, because that, more or less, in graphic terms, is the difference between South Africa and the US. It's like, to mix my metaphors very badly, it's like going into a game of poker and, you know, your opponent's, you know, got two or three aces and you've got a pair of twos. Well, the guy with the aces generally wins.
Let's talk about the US being some 26% of the world economy and South Africa being less than 1% of the world economy. I think nothing gives better context than actually those numbers.
Absolutely. It's a $29 trillion economy on the one hand, and ours is, what, about $450 billion. I mean, it's a complete mismatch. So that's one thing. Of course, you know, if Ibrahim Rasool's to be believed, we're a moral superpower, he said, which I think might have pertained in 1994. It certainly doesn't in 2025. But it's not just that America is the big, you know, 900-pound gorilla in the world sandpit. It is that because of America's size, heft, influence, and military, it controls most of the institutions. So there's, because we've run out of money and there's an assumption, well, we could go to the IMF and get a soft loan. Actually, most of the voting shares and certainly the veto power of the IMF, the World Bank, the G7 for that matter, are controlled by the United States or are operated by the United States. So it's not that you can say, well, I'm going to pick a fight with the US. If you pick a fight or lose a fight with the US, there are cascading consequences. And you know, Bronwyn, one thing, for a further article, which I've had to write about the subject, South Africa, or the government at least, the governing party, spends a lot of time relitigating the past. So they're more comfortable when we're talking about apartheid because they were in the moral on the moral high ground and their opponents were in the depths below them. Well, you can't run a country based on what happened 30 or 40 years ago. But, you know, I'm old enough and ugly enough, Bronwyn, to have been around in the 1980s when the United States Congress and institutions, both legally and then factually, imposed financial sanctions on South Africa. And, you know, victory has 100 fathers, defeat is an orphan, to quote President Kennedy. But I think one of the fathers of the end of apartheid, one of the causes, one of the biggest causes, was the imposition of financial sanctions against South Africa. Now, I can only speculate here, but if we continue down the road that's already been signposted by recent actions of the government, Rasool, Ramaphosa, and others, then if the end of that road or along the road, we land up with sanctions against us of the financial sort.
Frans Cronje, who weighed in with his view here to say that what we need to be very, very cautious about or concerned about is the potential for sanctions against the holding of South African government debt. That is a very big problem.
Business News as follows these things. We've got about 25% of our debt is held in foreign hands. So if that becomes a target for sanctions, well, you know, we've got a fiscal crisis at the moment and a borrowing crisis and a big deficit. We're going to be in all kinds of pain without the paddle to get out of that sea of pain. So I think that's one thing. But what will quickly happen, and I'm not suggesting it is going to happen, but I think if I was running foreign policy in this country, I would have all those scenarios stacked up and on the whiteboard. If it's going to happen, it won't just be that debts, that South African debt will be much more difficult to either issue or place or hold. But a lot of countries and multinationals who do business in South Africa will themselves become targeted for doing business with us. It's a bit like, you know, the way the Biden administration, quite correctly in my view, put Russia, or the EU has put Russia as a result of its aggression in Ukraine. And once again, I'm not suggesting that South Africa is worthy of this exemplary punishment. But, you know, you've got some pretty vengeful folk in the White House, now in the State Department. And if your business in life is to continue to offend them, then to use that old South African word, I'd just say pas op.
There's a video of Nomvula Mokonyane on a podium talking about the renaming of Sandton Drive and really forcing home the messaging in the most aggressive manner. That this will be called Leila Khalit Drive, and we want the U.S. consulate to put this on their letter.
She is almost a sui generis in her general awfulness. You know, she was named by the Zondo Commission as being corrupt and should, by rights, if we had a half-competent NPA, you know, be in the criminal dock somewhere in one of the country's courts, but she isn't. The other thing, this is the same lady who was the chief cheerleader of Jacob Zuma. She's never met a president of the ANC she didn't like, who said when Zuma was destroying our currency and our standing in the world, said, we will pick up the rand, do what you like. I think she accused white people of urinating on the Constitution. I mean, most appalling person. But, you know, she's one of the top six officials in the ANC. And once again, the ANC will try, or the government will try and say, well, that's not us, that's the party. But, you know, it's six of one, half a dozen of the other. Anyway, I see that the DA motion to rescind the renaming was rejected, not incidentally just by the ANC, but Mr. Gayton McKenzie is a big favorite of yours. I see his party voted against the rescission of that. And
not a favorite of mine.
Well,
not
I'm just saying, I just see he's much.
He's interviewed regularly on Wits News. I haven't put my hat in that ring.
No, listen, I'm all in favor of free speech, and apparently he's a compelling speaker. But, the ANC, the PA, the PAC, the other ragbag parties in that Joburg Council declined the DA motion. And apparently the renaming is going ahead, or maybe it isn't going ahead, hasn't been rescinded. Who knows? But once again, this is something that a proactive, even an efficiently reactive government would stop. And they've got the majority in the Joburg Council. And, you know, they're all loyal and disciplined cadres. A message should have gone out. Stop this nonsense. And Nomvula should be, you know, cautioned or disciplined for saying what she said, because it's very harmful to the country. At the end of the day, Bronwyn, postures and gestures in politics, as you know, can be very, very expensive. This kind of rhetoric and this kind of childlike, putting your nose of America in some kind of, you know, opprobrium is not only self-harming, but it's not how adult people behave when confronted with a crisis. And it is a crisis, this. It's not a hiccup, as Sir Ramaphosa described it. But yet we don't seem to have that kind of behavior as a response to the situation we're in. And I think that's to be regretted.